All right, everyone, Andy had to leave early, so you've got the pleasure of my company. You've seen the best bit. I'll show you what you're missing because Andy's not here. We've seen the charismatic corner and the charismatic mat, and we've seen the shallow reef work. We're now moving into a deeper ocean or shallow waters, yes, and they're working with deep reefs. I'd like to invite Russ to lead us into that, into the depth.
Okay, hopefully not the depths of despair, but yes, here we go. So the Deep Reefs program, it's another collaboration between a multi-talented group of people with a range of skills that have been brought to bear on this project, so ecologists, marine technologists, and so forth, you know, that you need to do this sort of remote work, you know, on the deep floor, sea floor. So just to outline what I'm going to talk about, some of our objectives, what we started out to try and find, why reefs are important, some of the results that we've come up with, and then a little bit about future research directions and where we might see some of this work going in the future. So deep reefs, often called reefs that are out of sight, out of mind. These mesophotic reefs that exist where light is limiting the growth of corals can be quite different from those reefs that we're used to seeing in shallow waters. And they can be quite extensive too. And as you go deeper and deeper, they get more and more different from shallow water reefs. So potentially they're important because they're an area of undiscovered biodiversity. Potentially they could be refugia where corals can survive bleaching events and cyclones, and that could help repopulate shallow waters, so they could help boost the resilience of the shallow reefs. And they also provide habitat for many important species, particularly fish species, for example, that are important to both commercial and recreational fishing interests. So they are important in several ways, and they're generally speaking, quite poorly known because they are difficult to study. We don't know a lot about even what's down there, let alone their dynamics. So the objectives that we had really focused around those kinds of knowledge gaps, trying to describe the distribution of these habitats, where they were and what they were made up of, and also to try to understand something about the functions of these ecosystems, what made them tick. And that sort of set of objectives really fed into some of the key bits of information that management agencies, DBCA now, for example, that manages the Ningaloo Marine Park had, and you can see those up there in italics, and they also highlighted the need for process understanding. So if you're trying to understand how well you're managing an area or whether it needs management, you have to know whether it's changing over time, how things come and go, what the turnover rates are, and so forth. So these are some of the key things we started out trying to look at. And if I could put that in a more graphical format, what we've got here is that different sorts of topics that people have addressed in their studies of deep reefs or mesophotic reefs, as you go through time, you can see it started out with largely descriptive studies, a little bit of work on structuring variables, but the work has become more and more diverse over time. So some of the things that we've tried to look into are to focus our work around questions that are relative to management, also looking at the geomorphology and ecosystem function, new methods of studying these reefs, and the variables that are driving those systems. So trying to basically expand our knowledge in some of these poorly studied areas. And that's been summarized by Joe and the rest of us in this paper. So going on to describing what's actually down there and characterizing and mapping these reefs. So the first step that we took was to use multi-beam sonar to map the hardness and the depth of these reef areas. And we mapped several of them up and down the reef, but this is an example of just one, Helby Banks, the northernmost area that we looked at. And here you can see an analysis that breaks all the substrata down into different kind of physical types ranging from sand to rock and reef and everything in between. So you can see it's quite a complex mosaic there. And really that would be the first step in trying to map these areas to figure out what the bottom's made up of. And based on that map and this data, which is the community composition of the organisms that grow there, you can start to interpret those different bottom types as different ecological communities. And you can see this has been done by in another paper by Zhou et al. To different communities dominated by macroalgae, crustose coralline algae, coral, and deep sponges and deep filter feeders. So here we have those plotted and in relation to different variables such as depth, temperature, light oxygen saturation, and the amount of rock, which you can see the corals are, basically highly affiliated with. So this is kind of step two in the process of being able to map the communities down there. Going on to the next step, you can take the information on those environmental variables, the bottom type, and how the organisms seem to respond to them, and model the distribution of different communities. So here we have these five areas that we've swath mapped along the coast of northern Ningaloo, and the different habitat types have been modeled as they would appear on those different parts of the coast. So up here, Helby Banks dominated by coral assemblages, a band of macroalgae where there's still enough light on the seafloor, moving out into sponge-dominated areas here. And you can see there's quite a bit of variability in the relative abundance of those different types of habitat as you go from one area to the other. So it's pretty patchy, and this kind of information is going to be really important in terms of interpreting, how different areas might represent biodiversity and their vulnerability to different types of disturbances within that area. So these predictions have been looked at in a bit more detail to try and work out what the most efficient way of understanding the distribution of these things is, whether you can get a better idea of what the distribution of the assemblages is by modeling them at a fine spatial scale or a coarse spatial scale. And it turns out that the answer is different depending on which group you look at. So for corals, you get the most accurate picture by looking at a very fine spatial scale. And this turns out to be because the nature of the substrate, whether it's a hard bit of rock sticking up or a patch of sand, varies on that small spatial scale. And because the corals are so tightly associated with that hard bottom, if you get the bottom type right, you're going to get the presence of corals right. Whereas for sponges and algae, that's not the case. You actually get fewer mistakes in classifying if you can classify at a larger scale, basically because mostly they occur out on this big flat area where the patterns are much, don't vary so much on a small scale, basically. And so you can probably classify these types of assemblages much more efficiently if you just cluster on a larger scale. So a lot of this work has been done by Zhou, and you'll hear about some of his work using machine learning to do this type of work in his presentation, which is coming up next. But it's been a very productive bit of work that that he's largely been responsible for. So he's been a terrific student to work with, and he's actually gone on to a very solid job in the UK working as a researcher for a marine consulting organization, which I think is really a unique role that he's been able to go into. So it's his job to do scientific research as part of this organization rather than specifically focusing on task that they've been contracted to do. So I think it's a good reflection of what we've been able to deliver through the Ningaloo Outlook program in terms of the experience that he's had. We've also found a few sort of fun things on the way to doing this. So some of the unique features of the reefs, the mesophotic reefs of Ningaloo. One of them is that the extent of the coral zone in the reefs at Ningaloo is a lot shallower than in other mesophotic reefs. So a lot of the oceanic reefs, for example, corals extend down well below 100 meters. They barely get to 40 meters at Ningaloo, and the peak of coral cover is at around 20 meters or so. And taxa like Acropora will peak at even shallower depths. So this is probably because light attenuation is a lot higher at Ningaloo with the coastal setting and also some upwelling. So that's an interesting aspect and a difference between Ningaloo and some of these other areas. We've also made discoveries like these mushroom corals, which formed a very discreet and dense bed off of the reef at Helby Bank. So it's almost 3 kilometers long, but very thin, only about 90 meters wide. But we estimate there are up to 12 million of these little corals there in this strip along the reef. So the analogy that has been made is that that's equivalent to putting half Australia's population into Bondi Beach. And there's just a picture of it here. So this is the reef at Helby Bank, and this strip here is where these things are located. So they're a little bit off the reef. They don't start until there, and they don't really continue out past there at all. It's just an optimal zone between where there's enough light but not too much, and maybe enough wave action but not too much to keep turning them over and dispersing them. And they reproduce by fragmentation, so that's probably why they're able to become so dense there. And asexual reproduction, they have these little fracture lines around here, so that could break apart and continue to grow. Actually was well covered in the media, so it was it's really nice to see some of the work getting some attention for Ningaloo there. Some of the work that we've done to provide insight into the processes that are happening on these deep reefs relates to recruitment. So there have been very few studies of recruitment on deep coral reefs and mesophotic reefs in general. So we were able to put settlement plates down at 40 meters, 25 meters, 10 meters, and right up in the shallow areas on the reef slope and in the lagoon. Looked at all the different types of corals that were coming onto the settlement plates. And what we found was that the highest rates of settlement or recruitment were around 25 meters, which roughly corresponds to the area where there's most coral. So the patterns of recruitment seem to mimic the patterns of distribution of the adult corals. And also the composition of the recruits was quite similar to the variation in the composition of adult corals as you go from shallow to deep water. So our conclusion from this was that rather than acting as a refugia and deep reefs providing a lot of coral larvae to the shallow areas and vice versa, there wasn't a well-mixed pool of larvae that settled uniformly across all depths and then, you know, got winnowed out by mortality. The supply of larvae seemed to be very closely related to the corals that were living in that area, so the deep reefs might be quite independent in terms of their dynamics from the shallow reefs. This work needs to probably be repeated, and that was pretty interesting as a first take on those sorts of processes. We've also been able to do some work on the trends over time in these corals. So looking at corals at around 20 to 25 meters, data from 2016 and 2017 showed that the average cover of corals doesn't vary much from one year to the next. We had planned to go out late last year to repeat this again, but that had to be postponed, and we'll be going out in a couple of weeks' time to repeat these transects again to start getting a picture of the dynamics of those systems and how much they vary, how they respond to environmental disturbances. We still have more work to do to try and reduce the variability on these estimates so that we can be able to detect smaller changes. But, I think doing this repeatedly will come up with some methods to be able to do that. And we probably wouldn't be able to do it at all if we didn't keep developing some new technologies. So one of the technologies that we've been using is the Starbug AUV. So this is a small AUV. You can deploy it out of a rubber ducky, if you like, quite a small vessel. But it's still very capable. It can do kilometers of transect a day, taking hundreds or thousands of photographs and logging multiple environmental streams. So that data has been kind of central to our ability to do that distribution mapping as well as model the distribution, because we've got that in-situ environmental data that we can put alongside of it. This has been built by CSIRO, and now there's a couple more of these being developed as the demand starts to increase, and there's been a lot of interest to start applying this on the barrier reef for surveying crown of thorns, and also as part of efforts to get better environmental data so we can understand variability in coral bleaching around the reefs. We also developed new methods to do this work on coral recruitment. So we had these settlement blocks that we could drop down to the seafloor at 40 meters depth or more, and that was the only way that we were able to do that work on the dynamics of the recruitment in the system. So last but not least is the outreach that we've been doing. So Nick Mortimer has been really central to this effort. Now, this is not the bottom of Ningaloo Reef. It's a 5x7 image of a deep reef that we had printed up on a big piece of vinyl. And the students came from the high school and surveyed it with this ROV that they actually constructed with Nick over a period of a week, year before last. So they've had a really amazing experience, I think, in terms of the technology that's involved and also the ecology, because they get to see at real-life scale what the bottom looks like on those deep reefs and then kind of replicate the process that we go through when we're trying to quantify how much coral, how many sponges and so forth are on the bottom. That's a summary of what we've done over the last few years. Future research directions, I think we still need to keep trying to understand those dynamics, so it's a matter of persisting with those observations. We can probably do a lot more to stitch together some of the observations that we've got on deep reefs, so we've got a more continuous picture of what the habitat distribution is, and I think in the end we'll be able to combine those to help provide the information that's going to enable, really the best type of management practices to occur around the reef. So thanks very much for listening, and thanks to everybody who's made this this work possible. There's quite a large list of people beyond those that were on the initial slide. So the partnership, people that run the boat, people that look after the data, the IMOS AUV facilities, and the extended team. Cheers.